And we're going to take your phone calls next with our guest, Phil in Brogno. A few more questions also on Coast to Coast AM. Philip, I just came back from a conference in Washington, D.C. The conference was the X conference on disclosure. Do you think government's involved in secrecy, that it's going on?
I think there's some secrecy because I don't think it's widespread in the government. I think there's a very select group that has privileged information to this whole UFO thing. And I believe it started out with naval intelligence, and then, of course, it spread out to the other intelligence agencies. But one strange story involving the government is that just before the publication of Night Siege, I was contacted by the Air Force. You have to remember, I'm the first civilian UFO researcher to be contacted directly by the Air Force in a very, very long time. And I got an official letter from them saying that I would be contacted. And I didn't really know how the contact was going to take place, whether or not, you know, they were going to show up with the men in black at my door or something.
I really didn't know.
But it ended up as a phone call. And I got a phone call from a major up in Massachusetts. The letter I got was from a lieutenant colonel. And it was obvious he was collecting information for someone else. And he had me on the phone for about 2 hours. And he knew about the publication of Night Siege that was coming up, and he wanted to make it very clear that the Air Force did not want to start a UFO scare in New York. And he said that, and he wanted to know what information was going to be in the book, and especially the sightings around the Indian Point nuclear reactor. And he said to me that it's possible, he said, that some of the reports in the Hudson Valley were of an experimental surveillance aircraft at high altitude. And he said to me, after a very long conversation, he said, well, if you cooperate with us and give us information as it comes in, and he gave me a special number to call to leave messages, he said, we'll send you documents of sightings in the Hudson Valley area. And I said, well, okay. I mean, I'm not going to say no to this guy. And I received a packet of documents about 2 days later, letters and memos from the FAA calling the Air Force, what should they do about all these UFO sightings in the Hudson Valley. Also in there were reports of UFOs made by civilians. One report was from a woman who had an encounter with a triangular-shaped object, and it was an original letter. The letter was addressed to Bob Pratt. Bob Pratt, of course, you know, many people know, was a longtime UFO researcher, used mm-hmm. to write for the, actually co-authored Help Me Finish Night Siege after Alan Hynek passed away. I had an official letter there. It was the original letter. It was addressed to Bob Pratt. I called up Bob, who was living in Florida at the time, and I said, Bob, I've got a letter here that was addressed to you that I got in Air Force documents. And he said, read the letter to me. So I did. And he said, you know, I never received that letter. I said, I don't doubt it, because this is an original here. It's the original signature and everything of this woman who's reporting this incredible encounter. Now, there's evidence right there that someone in the government, in the military, is intercepting mail that are going to certain UFO researchers.
Sure.
I mean, so, I mean, that's evidence right there for right now. And plus, being contacted by the Air Force directly involving UFOs was also telling me that there still is government involvement, yes.
Okay, let's go to the phones. West of the Rockies, Dave in San Francisco, you're on the air with us. Hello, David.
Hey, George, good morning.
Hi.
I was wondering about Big Sur in Spring Break 66 down that way, and pulled up, got out, saw light, what appeared to be a shooting star on the horizon. There were five of us. And we all kind of took a pause and looked, and then it stopped and went back up in the air and did various kind of triangles and whatnot, and then came back down to sea level and came towards us and got larger and brighter. and then stopped. And it seemed like, I don't know, like a bunch of time went by. And I was wondering about what kind of formations or structures might be in the West Coast area of Big Sur.
Go ahead, Philip.
Well, you know, we have these triangular UFOs being spotted all over the place now. In the old days, people used to report classical flying saucers, but they seem to be replaced by these triangular objects. I've actually got some reports from the Big Sur area of triangular objects that were going low over the mountains, and sometimes the lights actually break up into individual objects then form back together. And so, you know, there's a lot of interesting activity out in that area. Yeah, I believe you did see something quite extraordinary.
First-time caller line, Bruce in New York. You're on Coast to Coast. Hey, Bruce.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks.
It's a great pleasure talking to both of you. This is for Philip, obviously. Sure. I grew up in northwest Connecticut in Litchfield County in a little town called Washington, Connecticut.
I know where it is. I'm in New Milford right now.
Yeah, yeah. And I've had many, many supernatural experiences there. Now, to cut to the chase, in the early 90s, I had a series of feathers materializing almost before my eyes in my house. And 2 years ago, I had a dream where there was a bird, and I heard a call from the stuff, and I started having all these memories in Steep Rock in Washington, Connecticut, that I was taught and initiated by some ancient druidic people who told me they lived there thousands of years ago. And I got all bunch of different teachings from them. So I started researching, saying, am I imagining this? What is going on? And I believe I was told that they were the Tuatha De Danann, and they were there when the North Star wasn't where it was now. The Chepauk River used to run the other way. And they said there was a great battle there, and over 30,000 of them used to live in this area. And I just wonder if that ties into anything that that you're talking about. Also, how would I reach you?
Well, you can contact me by email.
Yes.
And I don't know, George, do you have the email on the line, or should I give it out? Or?
You may give it out, Phil. Sure.
Okay. It's B as in boy, E as in Edward.
Yep.
L1313@yahoo.com.
Right.
Now, you said something very interesting because, you know, we have these structures in the area, and some of them even go into Connecticut.
Yeah.
And my initial findings were that they were about 3,000-4,000 years old. But
I was told they live underground. I was also told there was a certain barrow on the top of this hill. And I said, I don't know if it was telepathically or whatever, but I said, you mean if I went to this hill, I would find this barrow? And they said, no, because you wouldn't, only if we let you find it.
Well, that's fascinating. You should contact me. Sounds like you have some very interesting information.
Oh, I said a year ago, I was researching. I said, if nothing else, maybe one day I'll write a book about ancient druids in this area. And then through my research, I finally came across some of your books, and I was jumping up and down saying, this sounds like it.
Okay, very good. Next up, let's go to east of the Rockies. Albert in Cleveland, you're on the air with us.
Yes, how are you both doing tonight?
We're doing great, Albert. Thank you. That's good.
I am a Roman Catholic. I am a Christian. I am interested in angels and stuff. I was wondering if any of these like structures were had anything to do with angels and stuff, like if they were propagated and maybe you thought that the celestial beings in the Bible had something to do with creating them.
Well, you hit it right on the nail right on the head. My new book, Interdimensional Universe, talks about a type of what I consider extraterrestrial contact with people who have had contact with angels or angelic beings. As a matter of fact, I've been collecting a great number of symbols, which...
Yeah, like the movie Prophecy with Christopher Walken. They each have a symbol on their neck for what angel they are.
Yeah, that's angelic script. That is true. But there's also another type of writing that appears in a lot of these angelic contacts, which seem to be an actual language of this angelic society. And my new book really explores this. It talks about that in the universe there are most likely three types of intelligent beings: physical beings, beings made of light, entities, you know, that are pure energy, and something in between.
like thrones, dominions, and principalities, stuff like
right. And during my research, as I was saying on the Earth to George before, I was saying a lot of these contact experiences cannot be just explained by extraterrestrials. There's another aspect of it, and a lot of these contacts that I've investigated also have a similarity between angelic contacts that have been recorded throughout history. Now, so I think it's still going on today.
I'm sorry, was there an actual war that took place between these beings, like these angels or extraterrestrial beings, like Lucifer and Michael and them?
Well, the Bible says so.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of things. You know, I'm getting a lot of information, and it's really, really complex.
And they were, like, superhuman, and they, like, threw a lot of heavy things, and were, like, fighting like crazy, kind of like these super martial artists and stuff like that. That's what
Well, you know, according to what you understand, these are beings of these angelic societies that may be responsible for some of the UFO sightings.
That's what I believe, too.
Yeah, you know, they're beings of energy. They can take different shapes. I mean, in the universe, you see the universe is divided between matter and energy, and there's no reason not to assume that there are intelligent species in the universe that don't have physical bodies that are made of pure energy. And I'm not talking about electromagnetic energy. I'm talking about what astronomers now are identifying as possibly the dark force.
Yeah,
even though it's
matter,
not dark,
like
you just can't see it.
I also believe, and I'll let you go, and I'm sorry I'm taking so long, that this is what the ancient Greeks or Egyptians might have seen, like these, the Greeks called them Titans. They might have seen these fallen angels or angels that were like 10 or 20 stories tall, you know, and they thought they were Titans or giant gods. This Greek Titan, the word Titan means chief god. Maybe they were angels or the fallen angels that they
saw. You're talking about Nephilim.
Yeah, and that's what the Greeks might have thought were the Titans, stuff like that, so...
There's a lot of legends about that, and a lot of it is coming forward today because what's happening is that people are getting more in tune to something beyond their own realities. In the 50s, people wouldn't even think about stuff like this, but now, today, we seem to be merging closer and closer and closer to what Dr. Hynek used to call a parallel reality, and it's merging more into our world as each day goes on, coming to some central point of universal contact. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, and hopefully everything goes well with this, and I'm very interested in these entities, and hopefully I can look more into it. And
I think you should pick up my new book. It talks about exactly what you're talking about right now.
What's it called again? I'm sorry.
It's called Interdimensional Universe. You can find it on Amazon.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
As well. You have had three UFO sightings yourself, haven't you, Phil?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I have, and I usually say, you know, many UFO investigators out there, researchers, they do this kind of like on the weekend as a hobby, it's an interest or so on, but it's not really a reality to them. You don't really realize how real all this stuff is until you've had experiences yourself. I have seen the Hudson Valley UFO on three different occasions. Obviously, I would have to after chasing after it for so many years. But the nights that I saw it, you see, also hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of other people also saw. So I became like part of the witnesses. And the first time was coming home from interviewing a number of the security police officers near Indian Point, driving home in Austin at Route 9. I see this enormous lighted object in the sky that sort of like came above the horizon and turned on its side and rolled across the sky like a giant Ferris wheel. This was 1 o'clock in the morning. And then I stopped the car and get out. I was with somebody, and it went behind a number of trees but never emerged, like disappeared in the sky. And that was actually my first sighting, and that was pretty incredible. But the second and third sightings involved chasing the Hudson Valley UFO. And after you see something, you realize that this is not a game. This is a reality. These things are real. What's going on with people's experiences is escalating across the world, and it's all very real, and it's not something to play around with.
Next up, Wild Card Line. TJ in Austin. Hi. TJ?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've got a quick story, and then I have a question to go with it. I've had a number of sightings, less than a handful, but more than one. One in particular, I'm a truck driver from Minnesota. I go to the L.A. area for the last 8 years, pretty consistently, almost every week. Coming out of Las Vegas, rolling north on 15, I noticed something that just didn't work for the eye line. It was 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. Once I got to the top of the hill, there was two of the black triangles next to each other, silent, floating. Now, my question comes in. I mean, that convinces me, and it's 99.9% I'm convinced they're not possibly from here. Now, my question is, what if we back-engineered, not necessarily the U.S., but any country, back-engineered what we have found? Does that not make the perfect spy machine for anywhere you want to go? Nobody claims them. You know, nobody's going to take responsibility for them. You can go anywhere you want, do anything you want, get any information you want. And I'm curious on what you think about the back engineering process and what you think about that.
Back engineering.
Well, that's true. I mean, if you have a technology like that, you can run around and do whatever you want. You have to remember also that in the 40s, you see, when UFOs started appearing, when Ken Arnold saw the objects over the Cascade area near Mount Rainier in 1947, the government became very concerned, because when he drew the objects that he saw, he drew them sort of like chevron or like half circle shaped, almost like a boomerang shape, a chevron shape also. And the government became very concerned because they thought that they were Russian aircraft, because at the end of World War II, Germany was experimenting with a number of aircraft that they called the Horton Wing. And only one of the prototypes of the Horton Wing was found. But there were plans for something called the Horton 9 and 12 and 13, which bared a striking resemblance to what Ken Arnold saw over the Cascade Mountains. But the other Horton versions were never found, and it was thought that the Russians got a hold of them before the Allies. And this is one of the reasons why the United States government became very interested in investigating UFOs in the late 40s, because they were thought they would be Russians spying on us and seeing if they can get into this country without being detected, because the Horton wings were supposed to be invisible on radar. But the Russians were also having sightings and thought the United States was involved.
I think these cases are just incredible, Philip. All of them.
They are.
Stay with us. Philip Imbrugno, our special guest, will be back. What a fast night. We'll take final questions next. On our next Coast to Coast program, Cliff Pickover joins us. Archimedes to Hawking, laws of science, and the great minds behind them. A real science show on Coast to Coast AM. Philip, tell me about your work with the genies, if you would.
Well, that came in sort of like it just fitted into place. And, you know, I had been investigating a lot of this channeling stuff and so on. And it seemed that in all these channeling sessions, most of them, 97% of them, what's ever behind them seems to like be taking on different roles in order to make the person feel more comfortable or make the person drawn into the contact. Sometimes identifying itself as an ascended master or someone who passed over extraterrestrial and so on. Many of these contacts didn't really end up really good for the person in the long run. The word jinn is an Arabic word. It means hidden. And we see that throughout history, many different cultures have claimed to what we're going through now with this channeling and people channeling all these different type of entities that are really
staying hidden and not identifying themselves. And the Native Americans used to call them the tricksters. And they were beings that existed between matter and energy, and interacted with human beings for a very, very long time. And according to, you know, in the Arabic beliefs, and especially still in Turkey, they talk about the jinn. The jinn were very harmful. They're interdimensional beings that can take on many different shapes. And the whole story is that the myth behind it, or the legend behind it, is that they've been trying to get into our world for a very, very long time, and can only do so by working through certain individuals in this world already. And it's very possible that if you look at it from a different point of view, for example, in the universe, I believe that there are physical beings, they're extraterrestrials, and, sure, and they're probably, some of them are here from somewhere, accounting for a certain percentage of UFO sightings. And then you have a lot of these other contact cases that are almost describing angelic beings. Okay, maybe there's another class of being in the universe that's composed of so highly evolved that they've gone beyond the needs of physical body, their consciousness, pure energy. And another sort of being that's sort of like in between, not matter, not energy, but in between. The ancient text says that human beings were made out of matter, the mud of the earth, the solid part of the earth. The angels were made of light, and the jinn were made of smokeless fire. Now, when we think of the jinn, a certain class of beings that we call it, the word jinn means hidden again. Yeah. We like to think of, you know, Arabian Nights and Genie and from TV. But you see, the Arabic people made stories about the jinn to make it more humorous so people would lose their fear of them. But for them, the jinn were very real beings. And if the jinn do exist, and it seems that there are a class of entities that are dimensional that we have been calling the jinn for so many centuries, it seems to me that they're probably responsible for most of the channeling that's going on, because most of the channeling is like who's ever behind it is not giving their true identity. And if you take a bunch of channelers and put them in the same room together, they'll argue on who's right and who's in contact with the right people. So the jinn are a very interesting aspect of the UFO phenomenon.
Did you ever? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And you see them popping up more and more in many of the beliefs. I believe we have to look into the past, into many of the ancient legends, to help us explain and to help us understand much of the paranormal UFO stuff that's going on today.
Did you ever look into leprechauns? Do they fit into that category?
Leprechauns. Actually, so from some of the legends and the Celtic ideas, you see, the leprechauns, the idea came from, you see, there were these powerful Celtic gods, and they were entities of some sort, because the people, to them, they were very, very real beings.
Right.
They appeared as globes of light and so on and so on, and they could take on different forms. When Christianity came to Ireland, it seems that, according to the legend, St. Patrick brought Christianity in and took all the power away from these beings. A legend says that unless gods are worshipped, they lose their identities. Perhaps there are entities in the universe that feed directly on energy. That's possible. I mean, we as physical beings take in food and break in a lot of that food and turn it into energy for our bodies. Maybe there are beings in the universe who can take energy directly and feed on it. So when St. Patrick brought Christianity to Ireland, the legend says is that these old gods lost their power because people didn't worship them anymore, and they were banished to the hills where they became lesser beings of lesser power, fairies and leprechauns.
Huh.
Matter of fact, the legend says
great
that
stories.
The king of the leprechauns, the king of the Celtic gods, who was named Lugh, in order to appease the Christian beliefs and Christian gods and not be destroyed, he took on a Christian name, Brian, which means king.
Brian.
So, I mean, we have to look into these things, all of these legends, and not take them seriously as 100% fact, but as a possible piece of the puzzle that I talked about earlier.
Good point. Let's go to some calls. Wildcard line. Hello, Donna in Louisiana. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I'm just so excited to be on your show. You're welcome. I've had Philip. Hi.
Hi.
I've been having some very, very weird experiences happening to me here ever since Hurricane Katrina. I've seen rods. I've had red, white, then red lights flashing toward me from the sky. And when I look up, there would be lights, like groups of lights, and they would separate into two or four. And then I'd get my binoculars and look, and they would be, you could say matter, energy, colors. I would ask questions like, negative questions like, the president being evil, the government being evil, and they would start triangulating the lights every which way, crazily. And then I'd start talking about God, and they would loop up and down, and they'd shape hearts. And this has been going on now for 2 months, and it's still going on. And I did an email to someone who's previously been on Coast to Coast, and the following night there were jets between 1 and 3 o'clock in the morning, chemtrail on the whole sky. So I don't know if she's got my email message or what, but it's been going on for a couple of months, and I've been overwhelmed. I've sat out here and cried, and it's been very moving.
Lots of strange things going on in the skies, Philip.
And lots that's true, and what you heard could be classified as one of the categories or form of contact cases, which also seem to be escalating around the world.
CJ in Oklahoma City, you're up with us. Hi, CJ.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Well, George, first of all, I just have to thank you. Anytime I listen to your show, I always spend most of the night looking up. And tonight I was coming into Oklahoma City, and I was looking up as usual, and I saw my first shooting star.
I love it. Wasn't it gorgeous?
Yeah, it was awesome, man.
Yeah, it really is.
But my question for your guest, what is your take? Because I'm sure you've heard the theory before that there's like one faction of the UFOs that wants to keep us down, you know, basically see if we can make it on our own, get to their level on our own, and one faction that wants to accelerate it and try to help us get to that level. And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. David Jacobs would say, Philip, that there's something bad going on.
Well, you know, I think there's something bad and something good. Like I said, I don't believe that one particular intelligence is responsible for what we call the UFO experience. I think there are, as a matter of fact, you know, the evidence that I've come across indicates that there are perhaps a multitude or at least three or four different types of intelligence, each one in conflict with the other, not working with each other. One of them may be extraterrestrial, physical beings, and another may be beings of higher order that we used to call angels, and the jinn may also be in there, too. I mean, you know, we can call them what we want, but there are different intelligent beings in the universe, and it seems like they've been interacting with humans on this planet for a very long time. And I believe that we're coming to a point now where some type of plan or some type of communication, contact experiences are all going to pan out. We're headed to something very, very big, I think, in this whole UFO thing, because, you know, UFOs have a tendency to die out and come back, and now they're coming back again, but they're coming back strong.
Yes.
In the last several months, I've received more reports of contact UFO sightings and different types of paranormal experiences than I've had in the last 5 years. And so there must be something going on. Perhaps we're getting closer and closer to where these entities are coming from, and like string theory dictates, some of these overlapping universes at time cross over and create these nodes which allow two universes to come together and two realities to merge together. And we may be at this point in time. If I had all the answers, I probably would write another book, but it doesn't look that way.
Let's take some final calls east of the Rockies. Jeff in Florida. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, George. Hey, Philip. How y'all doing? Sounds like you need to take a one of those cameras that Linda Moulton Howell talks about up there to Hudson Valley. But I live here down here in Gulf Breeze. I graduated Gulf Breeze High School. Is there any updates on that? Seems like a lot of UFO hotspots are starting to kick back up.
Absolutely. What do you think, Philip? Have you looked in that?
Oh, yeah. I was down in Gulf Breeze. And when the sightings were, you know, really going on, really hot with a lot of things going on. And, yeah, I believe that a lot of people had sightings. And I've talked to a good number of people who also had abduction experiences there in contact cases. You see, that's all part of the same scenario. All these UFOs appear in one area and all these other cases pop up, paranormal cases also. And, yeah, I mean, you know, it's it was just amazing. I was down there for about a week and got some really good information from my data and some really good photographs and some images that people took. And, of course, you know, the experiences and the reports. A lot of sightings in Gulf Breeze. Recently, there are still reports that I get from time to time from people from down there, but it seems that it's sort of hit a low point, a low key right now. But that usually happens when you have a lot of UFO cases. It sort of dies out, but then also all of a sudden the contact cases come forward. And I think this is where we're at this stage now in Gulf Breeze. More and more people are claiming some type of encounter that's more than a sighting.
You know what's fascinating? Everything's happening right now. The economy is going down the tubes. We're in a war. People are, you know, upset. And now we get these massive UFO sightings. I mean, it's all happening at the same time. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's amazing that all of these things are coming to one particular point in time.
And we're coming up on 2012 as well.
And 2012, yes. And, you know, 2012 also is going to be a time when there's going to be a great deal of solar activity. And astronomers right now, and I'm in the astronomy community, we're predicting that starting at 2012, the sun is going to be very active, and we're going to have some incredible magnetic storms on this Earth. So that's only going to add to a lot of different situations, including what they're afraid of now is the blacking out of all of these satellites that we have in orbit.
Yeah, absolutely. We become so dependent satellite technology. West of the Rockies, hey, Jack, in Riverside, California.
Good morning, George, to you and your guest. It's great to get on the air. I've tried a couple of times, and it's fun to be here now at this time.
Great.
Hey, the reason I'm calling you is to let you know about a neighbor that I had here a few years ago, and he told me some things that I actually would confirm later on in life on the Earth, just like a few months or, like, say, a couple of years later. But he was working with a gentleman who was a propulsion scientist that worked at JPL here in Southern California. And they were working on an electric car, and he would sometimes, this propulsion expert, would disappear. And then finally, after a while, he would ask me, where the heck are you going? He goes, man, I can't tell you. He goes, okay, fine. So about a year later, he finally got enough confidence in my friend. And he said, okay, I'll tell you where I'm going. He goes, I fly out every so often. I fly out and I'll be gone from anywhere a week to a month to maybe 2 months. And because of this schedule, he actually lost several marriages. They fly me out to Area 51 and other secret sites. He goes, what are you, you're a propulsions expert, so I mean, you're probably working on new propulsions for planes, right? And he goes, no, that's not what I'm doing.
Reversed engineering, isn't it?
He's a reverse engineering propulsions expert.
And he has seen craft, hasn't he?
Well, not only did he see craft, he actually showed my friend. He says, see this scar on my hand? He goes, yeah. And he goes, I cut my hand on the leading edge of one of the ships.
God, that's incredible.
Hmm, yeah.
That is incredible.
I have no reason to doubt him. This was the most serious I'd ever seen him in my life when he told me this story. And I said, do you believe, Jeff, in these UFOs? And I said, I do. And I think they're all related to everything that we have in the past with our religions. And I was telling my wife the other day, I think they're all related. And she kind of looks at me like I'm crazy. But I don't
know. I think you're right. And when a friend like that tells you that story, you've got to believe him. Phil, we're out of time. I want to thank you for just a magnificent program, my friend.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure to be on.
All right. And for Kiris Coburn, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.